I want to welcome everybody to the Affordability Commission's Energy Technical Advisory Committee meeting of May 7, 2024. Just a quick reminder about be aware of background noise. Please keep your devices on mute. If you're using a phone, do not put yourself on hold. Please wait to speak until the appropriate times. And please state your name each time you speak and tag members when making and seconding motions. Let's go ahead and determine that we have a quorum. Drew Smith, Drew?
Present.
Oscar Calleja?
I'm here.
Bob the Robert Cashel?
Cashel, yep.
Very good. Jan Geiflers?
Good.
Here. Okay.
Tim Grabowski? Tim, are you on? Okay. Commissioner John David?
Here.
Okay. Brian Luksic?
Yes, I'm here.
Very good. Tony Morgan?
I'm here.
Great. Very good. Jonathan Parks? Roger Sanders?
I'm here.
Very good. David Wozniak?
I'm here.
Okay. Let me just double check. Either Tim Grabowski or Jonathan Parks, are either of you on? All right. Well, we have nine. That's a quorum. Drew, would you like to do the agenda in the minutes and turn it back to me, or how would you like to handle that?
Sounds good. Let's go ahead and do that. Okay. Welcome, everybody. Thank you all for attending today. Need a review and approval of the meeting agenda.
Make a motion. We accept the agenda.
Okay, we have a motion to approve the meeting agenda. Do we have a second?
I second.
Okay,
we've got a triple.
Yes, we do. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, meeting agenda is approved. Approval of the February 9th meeting agenda, or sorry, meeting minutes. Do I have a motion to approve?
Approve as written.
Okay. Thank you. So go ahead and all those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the February 9th meeting minutes are approved. Jeff, if you want to take it from there.
Thanks, Drew. So our next agenda item is the to review and accept the interim draft report for the research project titled Comparison of the 8th Edition Florida Building Code Energy Conservation with IECC 2024 and ASHRAE 90.1-2022. Our consultants from FSEC, Barakat, and or Swami will provide a brief summary of key findings. We'll have TAC questions and then we'll take any public comment, and then the TAC will have any discussion, and then move to accept the interim draft report. And that's the process that we'll use. Mo, would you like to kind of give a brief sort of overview of this piece?
Yeah, for this is mainly a research project, which we have done every time. We are about to update the Florida Building Code. As we know, we are gearing toward the 2026 update to the Florida Building Code, which is involve the review of the 2024 International Energy Conservation Code and ASHRAE 90.1-2022. So this study mainly we do to create a comparison between the current code, the 2023 Florida Energy Code, and the updated model energy code, which is mainly the 2024 International Energy Conservation Code and ASHRAE 90.1-2000, in this case 2022. And the purpose of it is really to point out those code changes that's with energy impact. As you know, we are required to certify to the Bureau of Energy that our energy code meets or exceeds those model energy codes. So this is mainly the first step toward that. That's what I have, Jeff. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Mo. Okay, before we get started, just a quick reminder of folks when we get into comments and discussion or questions. Remember that this is only, as Mo articulated, a comparison summary between the 8th edition, the Ford Energy Conservation Code and IEC 2024 and ASHRAE 90.1-2022. The actual comments on the actual code changes should be deferred until the TAC takes up these proposed ICODE changes in September and October of 2024. So that's where you'll actually engage it. This is just a comparison to provide information. And if you have questions and any comments you'd like to make on the draft interim form, we can do so. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to our friends at FSAC, Barakat and Swami. And I presume one of you will want to start off with a presentation.
Yes, please.
I think you should have it. I think Jim sent it over already. I saw it light up for a minute.
Okay. Can you see my screen now?
We can. You just need to put it in presentation mode and be ready to go.
Thank you, Jeff, for allowing me to present this result.
Sure, Barakat, just for a second. You're still in the, you're not in the, in the mode. You might need to, like, reverse screens or whatever it's called, you know, mirror, whatever, because we're still seeing the side slides. I mean, if that's all, if it doesn't work, that's fine, but if you can make it go into that mode, you're probably seeing it correctly, but we're not, so you need to reverse that so we see it.
I thought I just changed it.
We had this problem this morning too, but eventually it may be something going on. No, it's still the same. Go to view and see if you can reverse or, I mean, I can't remember what it's called and I can't do it unless I'm in PowerPoint, which I'm not in, so I can't tell you what the exact term is, but it's...
On the slideshow, click on slideshow and then click on
the slideshow will do the same thing as that icon will.
From the beginning. No, it does not? Okay. All right.
Yeah, it's just, that's just another way of that's the menu button instead of the icon doing the same thing. It's the...
You need the presentation mode. Present online.
Here's the presentation.
There's a, like, in the view... On the view menu, there should be like a reverse screens or mirror screens or something. That way it switches the view, or it switches the view so that we see the presentation only and you see what we're seeing now. It's just a reverse thing. And I don't know, I use a Mac, so it's pretty much the same, but I don't know exactly what it's called. And where's your view? Go up to your, look in the very top, look for the view, hit, you know, one more, hit that. And let's see.
Let me give him the option.
Okay, then try it in PowerPoint. I mean, I'm sorry.
If you go slideshow and then start the slideshow, it should work.
No. Go to view. Again, go to view.
I'm in view.
Switch windows. See what it says?
Switch windows, yeah.
Switch windows, you see? And go to the right. To the right.
Okay.
Yeah, switch windows.
That
should... can it allow you to switch? All right.
Do you see the view one in the actual GoToMeeting functionality? Like, not the PowerPoint, but in the GoToMeeting, do you have a menu or an icon for view. You should have one in the presentation mode. I can't see it because I'm not in presentation mode,
Hey, Jeff, we can do it this way. It's fine. Now, let's just go ahead and continue. I think we can see it. It's all right. If he can't do it, it's fine. We can go with this format.
Right. Well, sure. No problem. As long as, you know, it doesn't have the view menu then. Let's see. Let's see. We're not seeing.
We've done this for years. Why are we suddenly having so much trouble?
Well, technology change. When technology change, it becomes difficult. I don't know. Something happens.
There's AI involved.
AI, huh?
That's probably it, Roger.
I don't know what it is, so I can't help you.
So, if you... Where is it?
Oscar, good to see you, looking well.
So, has it changed it? No.
No, in fact, we're not seeing anything other than, looks like it might be your, now we're seeing your desktop.
You have multiple screens.
I was trying to...
Wow, a lot of screens going.
It looks nice.
Wow, this is like, this is Space 2021 here. Right. Just go back to whatever you had before and we'll go with that.
Yeah, let's just continue with what we had. So.
We might have to go back to in-person meetings.
All right, Joe.
I'm curious. I'd like to try a presentation. I'd like to try a presentation. Is it something systemic or not?
Would help us start with the other presentation. Back to this one later. Back to this one later.
Grabbing the swami. I don't know why I'm getting that feedback.
Yes. Are you still there?
It doesn't appear that he's there.
I've taken the presentation back, and I'll show my screen until he shows back up.
Are there more than one of you have the presentation, like Rob or
Sonny?
Have the presentation too.
I have the presentation.
Well, should we turn it to you and see if you can at least get it to work?
Bearcat just came back in.
All right. Yeah, I see that.
You have to let me then.
Jim, can you go ahead and give it back to Bearcat? He's back on.
He should have it.
Yeah, I can see that.
Bearcat, let's not try to do the other, but
muted.
Show it in whatever mode we can.
Do
maybe close out some of those screens too. It might make it less confusing. For... All right, we're seeing your desktop.
What about now? Still you can't see?
Now we're just seeing your desktop.
I'm not seeing anything.
It occurs to me, are you actual software, or are you just going to, the basic stuff? Do you actually download this software? It seems like, if you downloaded the newest software, you might not have full functionality.
Well, I'm using the online version of it, web version of it.
I think just go ahead, go with Rob, and then Barakat, go ahead, email it to me if it doesn't upload, and I'll project it for you. If you want to start with Rob, see if it works.
There we go. Start going.
Yeah, that's fine. Go ahead.
Very annoying.
Just make sure they change. The slides will change.
So you don't see the full screen?
No,
but it's okay. Just let's make sure you can advance the slide. Go to the second one.
Okay, let me go. Sorry for this technical problem.
It's always something in the system of some sort.
So this is an interim report showing the progress where we are, comparing the Edition Florida Living Code Energy Conservation with the ICC 20.4 and ASHRAE 90.1. 2022, these are the latest national energy codes. So the project objectives.
You guys aren't advancing. This is the same thing that happened to Ray earlier. It changed now. All right, you're on the third slide, which says commercial code change tab.
Yeah, I can't do it without that, man, without really going. Can you see now the third one?
Yep, we see it.
Okay. So that we have these three objectives that within the Florida 2023 Building Energy Code and comparing it to 2024 ICC and 2022 version of ASHRAE Standard 90.1 and providing a summary of the changes and identifying the core change with energy impact. And the second task is comparative analysis of the energy performance, again, the 2023 Florida Building Code against the two national codes, ICC and ASHRAE versions, and cost-benefit analysis of core changes with energy impact. These are the three core areas of the project, but at this point we are only looking at the commercial part and the ASHRAE 90.1 option of the Florida code. So I'll go through the code changes that we have looked at for this project, and here we go. We summarize the code changes for ASHRAE 90.1 option. This is a comparison between the version 2019 versus 2022. We've summarized each of the code changes, identified whether it has energy impact, and whether it's going to be included in the quantitative analysis, and provided some.
Please Please enter your access code followed by the pound or hash sign. To enable audio controls, please enter your audio PIN followed by the pound or hash sign. If you do not have a PIN, this conference will now be recorded.
I'm on our HVAC and service water heater and 20% on lighting and electric power, and the remaining go through administrative section, definitions, and the like. So I'll go through, I'll just briefly present the highlights of the code changes, the most significant ones. Starting with the envelope, so air leakage testing and measurement is one of them. This requires whole building air leakage testing and measurement for buildings with gross condition floor area larger than 10,000, smaller than 10,000, please. And the air leakage, the measured air leakage has to be, it should not exceed 0.35 CFM per square foot at 75 Pascal pressure differential or 0.3 inch water column. If the measured air leakage is between exceeds 0.35 and less than 0.45 CFM per square foot, in that case, one has to go through the process of diagnostic evaluation based on threshold gas or infrared image, and then seal whether the leakage point is, and with that sealing, then you may pass providing the evaluation report that the corrective action take. Demand control ventilation is another requirement that has changed. The current practice is, you know, the threshold is if the space size is greater than 500 square foot, and if the occupant density, the design occupant density for ventilation is 25 people per 1,000 square foot, then that meets the requirement for demand control ventilation. But now they have changed that so that the floor area threshold can vary with climate zone and the ventilation air requirement per ASHRAE standard 60.1. Here is a sample. This is the demand control ventilation requirement. You see it's a variable. I just highlighted here. I don't have that option here. The climate zone 2A and 1A. The threshold used to be like 500. Now it can be as high as 1100 here in climate zone 2A without exhaust energy recovery system. Then if you have energy recovery system, probably it gets more higher threshold. You know, previously, if you have actual energy recovery, exhaust air energy recovery, the demand control ventilation requirement was exempted. Now they have added it, but they have added it with a higher threshold of the space floor area. Similarly here, in the climate one there, in the smallest that I see is 600, so it means we have a little bit larger requirement. So these changes were met based on cost-effective analysis based on the various climate requirements. HVAC efficiency requirement changes. There is a new efficiency metrics values added for air source heat pump in heat recovery mode. So the COP value for heat recovery has been added in cooling operating mode when the heat pump operates in cooling mode, and then you recover hot water from it. So that's the COP values, a new requirement. And they have updated the minimum efficiency requirement for VRF systems, where they introduced CR2 for capacity less than 65,000, and the same thing for the heating mode. You have SHPF2 of reduced value than the previous one was added for a capacity less than 65,000 BTFR. And they also reduced the capacity limit for the air economizer requirements from 54 kBT/h to 33, so that in a lower capacity can be required to have air economizer going forward. add minimum fan efficiency requirement for low power ventilation fans. These are the fans that are commonly used for heat recovery type, in a bathroom exhaust, things like that, for inline air transfer between different spaces, and those having, you know, total electric power on input, you know, 180 watt or less. We have similar changes in thermal efficiency requirement for high-capacity gas-fired service water heating equipment. They increased it to 92% thermal efficiency from 90. Similarly, also for condensing boilers of high capacity, they require now 90% thermal efficiency. And these equipments, we're talking about size about 1 million BTU per hour heating per weight, up to 10,000. So they added a new section for water sufficiency requirement in the 22 version of ISO 9.1. Another update is, again, interior lighting and lighting controls. Lighting in lighting controls has been updated. Yeah, at least since I've been following these things at least in 10 years maybe, the last three quarter cycles, and it's continuously going lower and lower. This time, you know, the last time that we looked at it in the 2019 version was mainly moving into LED technologies, but now it's also improving the efficacy of the lumens per watt that it requires, so they have higher lumen output per watt of electric input, and so they have made changes to the space factors and reorganized it and reduced, on average, the LPD values reduced by 4%, as I said, because of improvement in the technologies, so higher lumen output per watt. And they have also replaced the bi-level lighting control requirements with multi-level controls with continuous dimming. Again, LED technologies allows or makes easier the continuous dimming operation. Here are another examples. So lighting interior for building area method. We see mostly they have changed, you know, reduced. But you can see here convention center is 0.64. In both projects, it's 2019 and 20 versions. Most of the, you know, the space types have reduced, but occasionally you might see some remain the same, but maybe a few of them or a handful of them may slightly increase. Exterior lighting controls. So this is the first time, I mean, the last time they haven't changed it. This time, there is a significant exterior lighting allowance reduction by about 40%. They have reorganized this section in the tables, and they have added clarification in the control requirement. So for each category of exterior lighting requirement, they clearly should specify the control requirements in a formal table. That's much easier to navigate through. Daylighting response control has also changed. The minimum interior lighting connecting load, you know, has reduced by almost 50%. From 150 to 75 for primary side lighted areas, and from 300 to 150 watt for combined primary and secondary side lighted areas control. So the reason is, you know, they move, because of moving to LED technologies, much of the power input has done already below the previous limit, so they that studies about this. They maintain the energy saving the same with daylight response control, but reduce the threshold levels that triggers daylight response controls. On-site renewable energy generation requirements is a new one. So this is a prescriptive requirement. Building must have on-site renewable energy generation with rated capacity greater than or equal to 0.5 watt per square foot, and the floor area per square foot means the sum of the conditions, the gross condition floor area for all floors up to the three largest floors. So you multiply this 0.5 by the sum of the three largest floors, of the building to get the minimum capacity of power generation on site with the industrial department. There are five exceptions to this. If the annual daily average solar intensity is less than 1.172 per square foot per day, you don't need to meet this requirement. If 18% of the roof coverage is occupied by something else, for example, if you have skylights that covers most of the area, then in that case you're exempted from this requirement. And 50% of roof shading because of some permanent structure blocking the solar incident to your roof, in that case you'll be exempted. But there is 50% roof shading based on certain conditions. Like, you know, you have to have that shading for about 2,500 hours per year. If you meet that criteria, then you can be exempted. And then the floor area of the building, if it is less than 10,000, it's exempted. And if it's alteration without addition, that's also exempted from this requirement. And this, there is an old section also added, a new section for additional efficiency requirement. For those of you with ICC base, there is additional efficiency requirement in ICC. This is the first time ASTRA introduced it. So this is a new section 11 that's used for additional efficiency requirement. And the previous section, energy cost budget, that you see on the right-hand side, has moved to section 11. You know, energy cost budget used to be, commonly used to be, you know, section 11. Now that becomes section 12. Here are the how that energy, additional energy efficiency requirement is applied. It applies to, it mainly applies to building envelope equipment and systems installed on new buildings, additions and alterations. There is floor area limit for new buildings and additions. The minimum area requirement is 2,000 square foot floor area. We won't apply for those less than 2,000. And for alteration, it has to be 5,000. There are 32 individual measures that are available the users can choose to earn the required minimum number of energy credit by building type and climate zone. And these energy credits in total amount to about 4 to 5% energy cost savings. Quickly, here are the energy credit requirements by building type. These are the 9 building types. And others means anything that's not included in this, you go to others. So you will see a number going from, you know, for Florida, from 37 to 50.
Please enter your access. To enable audio control, this conference will now be recorded.
You know, then you have to select energy credit from the various measures and add them that apply to your particular case. Here are the energy credits by measure and by building type. You have set of tables for each building type. We looked at 9 building types, start from multifamily to other buildings, and then here are the climate zone, here are the ones that you pick up, sum them up, so that you can meet that the requirement that we looked at earlier. Less, all these changes have been incorporated to the prototype building models, and we'll look at them, how they perform relative to the base case, which is our 2023 Florida Building Energy Code. Here is the comparison. We looked at how energy consumption varies between these two cases. The ASHRAE 19.1 based 2023 Florida Building Code against the ASHRAE 2022 ASHRAE 90.1. So to keep in mind the Florida, the Building for Nature Conservation, the actual option is a modified one. We have two cut sections that has been excluded that has some energy impact. That impact has been included in the comparative analysis. If we look into the details of the effort went into quantifying this, there are 88 code changes included in the analysis for 2022 version. These comparisons are relative to the, our case, that's the Florida case. Code changes with energy impact, there are 40 of them that included in the in this analysis, 14 code changes. And those are two code sections are excluded from the Florida scenario. So basically, you're looking at the impacts of 16 code changes in this comparative analysis. 16 for the type buildings to climate zone. In total, there are 32 prototype models simulated for each scenario. Here is the breakdown of the energy use, relative energy use, or the comparative for each prototype building. And the one you see at the bottom is the weighted average based on the floor air distribution that we have for the state of Florida. Then the breakdown here is similar. You have 45.47 MBTU per square foot per year. It's the 40.95 for actually 2022. So the difference is about 4.5 KBTU per square foot per year, which amounts to 9.94%. And similar analysis done by PNNL on a national scale, you estimated 9.8 national energy saving commercial building of the 2022 ASHRAE compared to 2019. So summarizing what we've done so far as part of this interim report, we reviewed the code changes of the 2022 ASHRAE 90.1 and identified the points in the energy impact, performed comparative energy analysis of the code changes between the 90.1 based 2023 Florida Building Code Energy Conservation with a national code, and this has been what I have presented today. Commercial remaining tasks. There are the task that hasn't been completed, and partly that we're going through them now. These are qualitative and quantitative analysis. This is the review changes of the 2023 Florida Building Code Energy Conservation and compare it to the 2024 ICC, provide code change summary and identify code changes in energy impact. This is exactly similar to what we did for ASHRAE, but this is for the ICC version of the code, or ICC-based version of our code. To go through the comparative energy analysis, similar to what we did for the ASHRAE, and then the cost-benefit analysis, and this is applies to both parts of the code. And we have something similar task ongoing for residential section as well. One of the first tasks here was supposed to be part of the interim report, but because it was delayed because of lack of because of the delays in the publication of the ICC 2024 code book and everything that was result, we require to have the code change history, all the assumptions that went into the proposal code change and the review process. Those summaries are important for us in making our determinations. We haven't officially received that, and that's why this half of the task has been delayed. We were otherwise supposed to be delivered along this with the other in the interim report. So coming to the currently active task that we are handling, with looking at the ICC version of the changes, based on the draft document that more provided, this is just the ICC change markup document which lacked some of the details that we need for the analysis, but we're making some effort to do whatever we can based on the limited information that we have. But this will be completed hopefully by end of June 30. But these other two tasks that you see we've grayed out probably will start sometime in July, so we may have to go through, you know, contract extension or modification to accommodate those changes, and probably will take us 3 to 4 months to do them. So I would think that will might take us sometime in September or later. Similarly, just highlighting, I'm speaking on behalf of Jeff Sunny, so he hasn't started the evidential exception. I mean, he has started maybe recently based on that limited documentation that I mentioned earlier, the markup version of ICC 2024. Hopefully, Jeff will also deliver these tasks by end of June. So there are other remaining tasks, all the cost-benefit analysis and quantitative energy comparison will resume sometime in July. Thank you. Thank you for your attention.
Thanks, Barricat. TAC members, do you have any questions of the interim draft report? All right, seeing no questions, is there any member of the public that wishes to comment? Alright, I'm come back to the TAC and ask if there's a motion to accept the interim draft report for the research project titled Comparison of the 8th Edition FBC Energy Conservation Code to the IECC 2024 and ASHRAE 91 from 2022. Is there a motion?
Second, Sanders.
Alright, we have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That would be unanimous. Great, thank you very much, Bearcat. And Rob, if you'll, Jim, if you'll turn it over to Rob Vieira. Our next agenda item is to review the proposed scope of work for the research project titled Review and Consider Possible Changes to the Thermal Efficiency Standards for Unvented Attic and Unvented Enclosed Raptor Assemblies. Before I introduce this, Mo, quick question. This is something that we want the group to review, but we also want them to approve it and recommend that the commission approve this project. Is that the way, the procedure we need to do this?
Yeah, I think, really, first of all, this is a research project which is mandated by mainly the legislature for the commission to do. As you see from the scope of work, the Florida legislature mainly established or section 553.9065 for the statute, which deals with thermal efficiency standards for unvented attic and unvented enclosed rafter assembly. However, this to go into effect, by the way, in July of next year. However, they did ask the commission to review this legislation and provide any changes needed. This is mainly a this legislation is specific to the prescriptive compliance method for residential, and mainly to revise that compliance method. But yeah, to answer your question, Jeff, we want the committee to mainly recommend this for this scope of work to the commission. Yes.
Great, thanks. Okay, so we'll hear from Rob Vieira of UF. He'll provide a summary of the proposed scope of work of the research project pursuant to the requirements of House Bill 267. TAC member will have clarifying questions on the scope of work. We'll hear from the public, and then the TAC will discuss and make a recommendation to the commission for approval of the proposed scope of work for this required research project. Mo, do you have anything else to introduce before I go to Rob?
No, not really. That's That's okay. What I have. Thank you.
Great. Thanks. Okay, Rob. Rob Vieira of FSEC.
Well, if I come down and try to share the screen, I'll just talk. That's fine. We've had enough screen sharing issues today. I don't have any pretty pictures here. Okay, we're just proposing this, and so when this got passed, as you know, it's requiring as Mo indicates, requiring unvented attic and unvented enclosure rafter assemblies that are insulated and air sealed with a minimum of the R20 air and firm building insulation to meet the requirements of sections R402. So this doesn't necessarily affect the performance portion of the code, but this allows folks to comply by the prescriptive R402 section, but it does require, adds in other things in the legislation, right? The building has a blower door test result of less than 3 ACH50. Well, you know, one thing that happens then, and they've covered that, and the next thing, the building, they not only want to have a ventilation system, but it has to be a positive ventilation system, a balanced ventilation system, or a hybrid all-house mechanical ventilation system. In other words, the house isn't to run negative all the time. If the insulation is installed below the roof deck and the exposed portion of the roof rafter is not already covered by the R20 insulation, the exposed portion of the roof rafters is insulated by a minimum R3. So they put in these other caveats, and all heating, cooling, and ventilation equipment is inside the building thermal envelope, usually for houses with this sealed attic. That's not really an added thing that's usually complied with, but those other things often are not complied with. So our concern is just, we've got sort of two big things proposed. One is to do a literature review, and really looking at moisture. There's been some information that's come out lately, most of it positive, but on moisture in sealed attics and stuff. So I know we're going to probably get questions, so we're proposing that we're going to just review that literature and more, you know, the papers on that, and provide a summary for you and the commission on those issues. And then task B is we'll do some simulations to see what the energy impact of this change might be. Right now, for example, in climate zone 2, you're supposed to put R38 between, you know, like up in the ceiling someplace, or if you were to do the roof and you were to try to prescribe by the prescriptive method, it'd be R38 in climate zone 2, R30 in climate zone 1. This brings it down to R20. And we're proposing to do this in, you know, a one-story, a two-story, as well as like a top-story flat in a condo or apartment building. With looking at it in, you know, climate zone 1, climate zone 2, looking at it with different duct tightness levels, and then maybe with and without the mechanical ventilation. Once you put the mechanical ventilation in, you sort of got to compare it to a house of mechanical ventilation, because that obviously increases energy use. And we'll look at it with different roof pitches. I think we're planning on a 4-12 and an 8-12 or something like that, just to sort of cover some of the differences there. Even though 8-12 aren't the most popular, although I just drove by a few the other day. So we'll look at the average change in energy use. We're going to summarize those findings and present them to the TAC and the commission. That's our plan. You might have other things you think should be looked at with this legislation. We'd love to hear them. But we'll turn it back over to you and see what you think of it.
Thank you, Rob. TAC members, do you have any questions regarding or comments regarding the proposed scope of work to comply with the requirements of the House Bill 267?
I have a question.
Sure.
This only applies to the prescriptive compliance, right? So it wouldn't affect or touch the performance method.
That's correct.
None of these things apply these conditions apply to the performance.
That's right. I will point out, Oscar, that the TAC and the Commission did approve the 5% greater stringency in the performance code, but we did not accept any of those, like IECC changes to the prescriptive code. So I don't know what the backing is. There may be some in the audience who know why the legislation tackled this. I think they tried to do a decent job with all the caveats they put in, so I'm not talking it. I imagine there's some builder out there that wants to prescribe by the prescriptive method, and that's why this got passed in the legislation.
Yeah, given the percentage of prescriptive versus performance submissions, you know, it's the performance is the 80-90%, and there's some people that use the prescriptive for some reason. So this should not be a big deal as far as the code, the general code is concerned, I don't think.
Any other tech members have any questions or comments?
David Wojcik, Oscar kind of asked a question. On the prescriptive approach, do you have any idea how many people actually use the prescriptive approach? Percentage-wise, total energy codes?
No, I don't. We've got very limited. When we've gone in and done different projects for you where we're going in and looking at, you know, 30 or 70 or 100 homes, it's been overwhelmingly sometimes 100%, sometimes over 1 or something performance. But those have usually just been single family, sometimes on other projects. Descriptive is better. When you're doing additions, I think sometimes, you know, or just putting in a window or something, obviously a prescriptive thing is an easier way to go. But I don't have that data. You have, I think it's under some private funding, it's collecting, supposed to collect some of those, so it might be a question to ask the UF folks as opposed to UCF folks.
It just appears that the majority of the time we spend is on the prescriptive approach and not the performance approach. And you know, like I said, if you people are using it, I guess we have to have it. But one thing is kind of unusual. We've had billing departments where we provide the prescriptive approach because of an addition or changing windows or something, and they reject it. They want a performance approach. And it's like, well, how can we do a performance approach whenever we really don't know all of the materials and everything that the home is constructed with? And they basically say, we want a performance approach. So we have to just, you know, write a little disclaimer that we're only using, you know, certain things. But, again, the building departments are the ones that dictate whether or not they'll even accept the performance approach on some of this stuff.
Well, I think, you know, it's a state code that's supposed to accept either one. But, again, I think the reason this may have gone through is because we made the performance stricter, so... We'll have to look at new data coming in under the new code, whether that has shifted anybody going to prescriptive instead of performance. Obviously, the performance gives you more flexibility, and most builders want that flexibility.
Hey, Jeff, this is Mo, if it's okay.
Sure.
Yeah, based on my experience and based on communications with the users, we don't see much of really use for the prescriptive. A lot of time we see that owner builders who are trying to do the work themselves, they want to use the prescriptive, but the builders in general, they use the performance because of the flexibility. So I'm, you know, that has been the case for a long time. So it's really limited, has a limited use.
Okay, any other questions or comments, TAC members? Anybody from the public that wishes to comment?
Yeah, I have a comment.
Okay, so I'll go ahead and say your name and representation.
This is Timothy DeCarrion. I'm with Broward County Board of Rules and Appeals. Yeah, in regards to prescriptive and performance, not like you say, not many people use the prescriptive method, and it's because of that 30% rule we have in Florida. That if you're changing windows or doing a small renovation on a project, the energy code does not apply unless it hits that 30% threshold of the value of the structure. And because of the values of the structure being increasingly going up and going up, a lot of times it'll never hit that standpoint. And so I guess most of the forms that I've seen prescriptively are small work for alterations and additions only, primarily for small additions, like, you know, somewhere around 100 square feet.
Okay, great. Thank you, Tim. Appreciate it. All right. Is there anybody else in the public that wishes to comment? All right. Well, let's come back to the TAC. TAC members, unless you have any other discussion, would you look for a motion to recommend that the Commission approve the proposed scope of work for the research project titled Review and Consider Possible Changes to the Thermal Efficiency Standards for Embedded Attic and Embedded Closed Wrapper Assemblies pursuant to the requirements of House Bill 267? Is there such a motion?
Oscar, I have made a motion to approve the report.
Guys, for a second.
All right, we have a motion and a second to recommend the Commission approve the scope of work for the research project. Any further discussion? Drew, if you want to call the motion, feel free.
Sure. No further discussion. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. Motion is unanimous, Jeff.
Very good. Okay, is there anybody else who has any TAC member or public member who has any particular comment that they want to make at this time?
Jonathan Barks has been on the call for all but 2 minutes, so I missed the roll call, but I've been here the whole time.
So. All right, so the vote should reflect 10 members in each instance, and thank you for letting us know, Jonathan.
Yeah.
Okay. Seeing none, but Drew, I'm going to turn to you just to state we stand adjourned.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. I appreciate your help today, and thank you, members of the TAC, for being here. Appreciate all your time and efforts, and we stand adjourned.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Be well.
Bye, Jeff.
This conference is no longer being recorded.